listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, May 25th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. Glad to be here as always.
Glad to have you and glad to have those joining us live. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to catch up with us, and we appreciate your contributions in chat. Thanks to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives as well. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we will begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, tonight, our topic is humans and their gods. Maybe we should say our, well, I won't say our gods because we all don't share the same gods, but kind of sounds, you know, speaking of aliens last week, kind of sounds like, ah, we're doing a report to the alien motherland. Ah, these humans and their gods and how they do things, this, that, and the other. But it is an interesting place to start. Dr. Vicki, you and I were just talking about that before the broadcast went live, you know, how we were going to get going. And the discussion last week was great. We were talking about alien life and, you know, recent UFO sightings. Kind of went back a little bit and talked about it from the ancient alien standpoint. And that's a great segue into tonight's topic. And
I think we were talking also about the congressional hearing last week. And we're going to carry on that discussion next week. So about the outcome kind of and what people took from it, but which is not much, but we can talk about it next week.
Well,
but I'm of the mind that really how, you know, when we think of gods, we think of the sky. We think of the sky world. We think of nature and, you know, it's things outside of ourselves. And I really, in my mind, I think humanity got its ideas for the gods from, you know, extraterrestrials, intergalactics, whatever you want to call it, just basic out there other beings. That's what I think.
Well, and since, you know, we know that Scientology is obviously right. No, I'm sorry, did I say Scientology? Yeah, Scientology. That's the one where they have Theons and Xenu. Am I correct on that?
I don't know anymore.
Xenu is the galactic god from the Scientology mythos. I'm pretty sure we're covered under parody law on that, but nonetheless, so this is a fascinating theory, and of course, people by now have heard about this going back a long ways, and I think it's very plausible, very plausible. And it's it's interesting how different the ancient gods are from what we would consider, you know, modern gods, even in, I think really the only major polytheistic religion still going is Hinduism. And that has retained a level of, you know, fidelity to its kind of ancient roots more so than the modern monotheistic religions. Buddhism obviously has its ancient roots. Well, by human standards in our entire development, it's relatively recently in the last 2,500 years, but, you know, from our perspective.
Yeah, when I think about the gods and how humanity started conjuring them up and regarding them that way, I go back thousands of years in my mind, like pre-pyramids kind of thing, pre-Egypt, pre-pyramids. Mm-hmm. I go way back in my mind because I think humanity has ultimately always looked outside of itself for something. Where did that start? And maybe that's just kind of in the DNA somewhere. I'm not sure, but that's what I think of. You know, some other beings or things in the sky that you don't quite understand, and or even nature for that matter. You know, mm-hmm. it's pouring rain and you need your crops to come in. You know,
right.
What did we do wrong that, you know, it rained on our parade? Or,
well, even pre-agriculture, humanity is, this varies. I know the estimates on how long, you know, anatomical humans have been around, but I think 100,000 years is an easy compromise, at least, if not longer.
Yeah.
If I would probably bet on longer that we've been here. And of that 100,000 years, we have roughly 6,000 to 7,000 that we have any kind of written record for.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that we know of, but there's not much else. You know, I don't know if they can find any more caves and walls and stuff. I'm sure they could to say, oh, that's 40,000 years old. But mm-hmm. as far as any kind of historical symbology or writing, you know, it's pretty limited. When you look at our vast history, you know, we've only mm-hmm. got, honestly, I think maybe a couple of thousand years if we're lucky, but written paper is only like 1,000 years, less than.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do we know?
I mean, even the ancient religions, we know very little about like ancient Celtic religion. We only know from what the Romans have told us and from mm-hmm. what we've been able to gather from other more recent Germanic peoples after they came into contact with other, you know, what's the term for a culture that can read and write? Literate, thank you. A literate culture.
You caught me telepathically. I agree. So, I mean, I think automatically in my mind took back thousands of years of where would humanity have looked outside of itself? And I think that would be to conditions of weather, shooting stars, comets, meteors.
Mm-hmm. You know, and just celestial events. Oh, eclipses.
Yeah. And sure, eclipses are huge in historically. So I think that, you know, those things outside the self that we don't understand, we want to honor it, and automatically we have this fear factor. If I do good, then I'll do well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, vice versa, putting curses on people because you don't like them. But gods will help me. So I think it's more in that way that we began. That's my thought. I could be absolutely off the wall here.
Well, I think it's a mix and match. We have human cultures that have sprung up from all kinds of different geographic places. Mm-hmm. You know, humans come out of Africa, you know, over 100,000 years ago, and we start to go to various places. And as we become more geographically disparate, you have different types of you know spirituality come from different
cultures.
But there are some common threads, and it's, you know, I think that we admit that, you know, there are a lot of different pantheons and mythologies and dogmas and religions that we'll never really know much about because they weren't literate cultures. But what we do know about, you can look back and look at the Egyptians, and Dr. Vicky, I was bending your ear on this before the broadcast. It's fascinates me that the Egyptians, first off, their culture was relatively similar, and, you know, it did change, of course. You can't go 4,000 years without changing, but it went 4,000 years as a consistent, you know, monarchy, kingdom, consistent body. That's 4,000 years of changes in their culture and religion. And over that span of time, at one point or another, they've had 1,400 different gods that they worshipped. And this is something that I found that was fascinating, that they had the first monotheistic religion that we know of, and that was called Atenism. And that was when one of the pharaohs basically went to one of the It was a variant of the traditional solar deity Ra, named Aten, and they made him the sole god. It was the first monotheistic religion. That lasted as the state religion for about 20 years before they said, "Oh no, that sucked. We're going back to the polytheistic stuff."
Ah, politics of the day.
Yes.
Change the religion.
And that's a huge thing. So, what's another thing about religion and gods and these deities and these structures? Because early religion didn't have a deity, they had multiple deities. It was an entire pantheon. They had different cults associated, not in the way that we would think of a modern kind of, Western cult of, super fanatics, but in the old sense of a group. Well, I'm pretty sure they're probably fanatical too, but a group of people devoted to a particular god. And how transactional it was. You made sacrifices to these gods of, hopefully you're just doing it with, fruits, vegetables, and animals, and in darker times you're doing it with other things as well, humans. But it reflects the people of the time, and it reflects the awareness and cultures of the time.
You know what
And
I just
go on.
read too, Michael? Sudan has way more pyramids than Egypt.
Oh,
I
that wouldn't
have no
surprise me.
idea. And all the other places, so why Egypt? So when you're talking about all the different gods, and I think those
Well,
power structures over time that we're more familiar with, it really has started to make me curiouser about places like Sudan, even the Antarctic for that matter, and different places in North America, South America. I know we talk a lot about, lots of people talk about the Mayans and
Well,
Machu Picchu and those kinds of
what
cultures, but there are way more all over the earth. It's fascinating
it is.
in this evolution of what we do to honor the gods or bring the gods to us, or what is the motivation for that? Are they truly magnetic forces on the planet that hold everything together? I don't know. I'm guessing. There's lots of speculation and theories about this, but how humanity then honors, and to what extent they'll go
It wasn't
to
it. Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, to relate to their gods, to have that kind of relationship with something outside the self.
Isn't
Fascinating.
it is fascinating, and it's kind of in a. Well, I think it's a god and a pantheon of deities and a structure. I think tie into the culture, which I think makes it a manifestation of their own glory as well. Glory to the gods, and it will be a testament of time. You mentioned Sudan, and correct me, and I'm just going off of memory. I could easily Google it on the computer that's right in front of me, but I'm pretty sure the Sudan, especially North Sudan, was often part of the ancient Egyptian Empire, right? And they were the Kush. I think at one time
It's
they had a dynasty that ruled over the as a pharaoh. Let's see.
Africa to the Arab kind of in it's kind of in that area, but over.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So it again, geographically, it would be considered in that area, but I think it's more south and east of Egypt, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong.
Well, it waxes and wanes, but the kingdom of Kush was a people that interacted with the Egyptians a lot and took over Egypt for about 500 years. I think
Quite fascinating. I think that
per
as,
Wikipedia.
yeah, I know, there we go again.
Quote
Then they'd be bugging me for donations. I try not to use them too much
him.
anymore. Speaking of gods, I think that even you're talking about as a culture and how we build our cultures based now more on religion, and I think in my mind, we might have done a flip where, let's say, the beginning of humanity, just minding your business, trying to eat, forage, build a fire, whatever that is. And when you're interacting with nature and things outside yourself, and but still more self-responsible. And I think what we've done with religion is try to absolve ourselves of responsibility, and just kind of. I know I've said this a lot. It's like, my team is going to win tonight, not your team, because God's on my side, not your side.
Yeah, and it's such a
That
great
kind of
justification for people to do horrible things so often, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know what comes to mind? I think we didn't get TV in our house till I think I was 8 or 9, maybe. But I remember The Outer Limits. I loved that show. I was an alien freak when they first all came out with these programs. And I remember I was told to go to bed, but I went and said my prayers, Michael. Please, please, God, if you just let me watch The Outer Limits, you know. No, I had to stay in bed. So I kind of gave up on God. God didn't let me watch The Outer Limits.
Well,
but that's kind of what people do. And but even at a young age, I figured it out pretty quick. That had nothing to do with God. It's got to do with your parents. And but a lot of people don't. You know, yeah. A lot of people continue as a culture to impose their interpretations of a godlike existence or a relationship with their gods, you know, into their life through, again, however you process through your own conditioning and your life, your world, your culture, your family, your community, and so on. So
yeah.
And so much of it is just fabricated. Like, people just make stuff up as they go.
It's a matter of convenience. And they buy into their own lie as much as anyone else because it's a get-out-of-jail-for-free card kind of thing for their conscience.
Well, that's what I was talking about. But the responsibility.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
If God must have thought this was supposed to happen, and like then you don't have to think about it.
And that was that was the pervasive thought for hundreds of years, maybe even 1,000 years during the post Roman time that is commonly known as the Dark Ages through the medieval period into the Renaissance. You have, this entire theocracy that kind of develops in Western Europe and. The predominant thought is, well, if that person's sick, it's because God wants him to be sick, and, well,
exactly.
The heck with him, you know?
There are people now who believe COVID is a God thing, you know?
Oh, come on. How could COVID be a God thing if it's fake and made from, you know, a lab at the same time?
Well, there's that flip side. Other people, there's people who believe that God is teaching humanity a lesson, blah, blah, blah. Again, it's all about how we build our thinking and our need for things outside of ourselves.
It's all a matter of perspective, you know, too.
And how we built that. Now, every country, every kind of subculture in a country has its own beliefs and different. It's not just about different religions. It's really about different faith.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of religions say we're not a religion, we're a way of life. We're a faith. You know, and
absolutely,
and that's part of the terminology too.
Not even to getting into the you know cult of personality or you know this religion or you know fanaticism built around individuals or you know ideologies. Mm. It can be equally as you know there is a belief structure there, and you create these icons, almost godlike figures, in a pantheon of ideology too, and. Whenever you do that, and I guess one of the things I kind of want to, one of my main points on this whole topic from my point of view is putting these things into context, putting these religions, these gods, these, you know, human-made creations, as far as we know, into the context of the time and helping you understand them, helping you understand the people that created them, and also realizing that it's, you know, to your excellent point, Dr. Vicky, it's not a way to avoid responsibility. And it's not something that, well, how do I want to put this? I'm kind of struggling to think of the exact words, but basically to take things with a grain of salt. Don't buy into it as much. And also realize that you don't have to put your faith into something that is, you know, supposedly divine, that's supposedly this great thing in order to succeed or to have the ability to push forward in life. You can find that strength within.
Yeah, I think what really happens is people often, and I think we all do this to some degree, we have people we look up to as mentors. We have people who inspire us, you know, that whether that's just in your family, your community, or you know people you've met in your life, but also politically or culturally. We thrive on that kind of inspiration. And I think that that's kind of twofold. We're really glad they're doing the job and not us, because then I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. But the other is we kind of feed off of that again, the only word I can think of, Michael, is that inspiration for motivation, you know, and that inspires us into some kind of action and change in our lives when somebody plants seeds. Now, again, we can take Martin Luther King as a perfect example of that. And so we do look for things to look up to, look onto. And I think religion is much the same, because if we have this great lack of understanding of ourselves, lack of self-awareness, this lack of I don't get it in the world,
right,
we can then just put it to, oh, well, you know, that's the president's fault. You know, that's the prime minister's fault. That's God's fault. You know, that's somebody else's fault.
I'm just passing
when
the
things
buck.
Don't go, you know, and so we do that. And, you know, but there's, like in Canada, we've got all these many layers of politics that the prime minister may know nothing about, but he's going to take the heat for it, you know. So it's so easy to look up to and yet blame, you know,
yeah,
anything that we can't. You know, Dr. Allen's saying it's a way to control people in the chat. Thanks for that, Allen. And so, okay, she also said they turned AIDS into a punishment from God because Christians hate homosexuality. Well, you know, which is an interesting thing, because I've known a lot of Christians who are not anti-homosexual. And yet it goes into this blanket thing for the people who have the loudest voices. And so we have that dilemma as well. So I think that people are generally confused. It's really difficult to sit down with yourself and be completely awake to who you are and totally responsible. Now, we're always interacting with others. We're interacting with universal energies, frequencies, shifts and changes, our sociology, our psychology. You know, there's so many factors that has us change and evolve. But, you know, I got to look back at my life and just say, well, I was stupid. You know, it's nobody else's fault. I mean, yeah, people contributed to hard times, but I did that to myself. It's really hard for people to do that, which I find really fascinating, because God had nothing to do with it. No God. 1,400 Egyptian gods, you know, no other Jesus God or anybody else had anything to do with it.
You know, it's I think everybody is, you know, I remember we've been talking about different kind of past experiences on, you know, prayer. You were talking about praying to be able to stay up and watch a show. That made me think of my first prayer that I can, well, aside from, you know, your standard stuff and, you know, praying for family members, this and that. I remember learning kind of the meaning of prayer once I was playing Mario. It was the original, you know, Mario, maybe even before Super Mario Brothers, before Luigi came in. But, and it was, I gotten very far in the game. It was probably six. Gotten very far in the game, and I was, you know, real far in. And this is back in the day, you know, you die, it's done. You have to go back to the beginning. I just wanted to get through so bad, so I was praying to get through the game, to get through the beat it, and Dad walks through, and Dad sees me and says, what are you doing? And I said, I'm, you know, praying for this. And I say, with a little bit of pride, say, I'm praying to Jehovah to help me get through this. And he said, you don't pray for that kind of stuff. And he sat me down and kind of explained, you know, the valuable things in life that you should, you know, care more about and be altruistic and this and things back in the day when it was still
not
the,
Dr. Mario.
Yeah. No.
You know, and I got to tell you, Michael, this is why I found, and I know it's going to upset some people here, because I get this all the time, the movie and the book The Secret, I found really offensive.
Yeah.
And I found it offensive because of its materialism. Mm-hmm. Now, the law of attraction, absolutely. Like, we can go there. But what I found so difficult to take is this. You can have a bike if you want to. You can have a mansion if you want to. You can have this if you want to. And I'm thinking in my mind, would you say that to a war-torn country that is starving? Like, when you're talking universal principles, it has to apply to everyone on the planet, not just your select culture.
Exactly, exactly.
And this is why I think it's difficult for people to let go of their gods, because of that control to their little corner of the planet and in their little sphere of influence, you know. So
you know, let's,
I think that that's hard.
Absolutely. And, you know, touching on that point of, you know, just sheer selfishness. And it reminds me of, you know, the gospel of wealth. And that is a recent take on Christianity where God wants you to be rich. He wants you to try to get rich. And if you are rich, it's because God wanted you to be rich. And it's, you know, so self-serving. And it makes me think about how...
But that's reverse psychology, so that those ministers can, you know, go around in their big cars and live in their big houses also, and not feel guilty.
It's also a get out of... It's also kind of... People that are, you know, into that obviously are wealthy often themselves. So they're saying, hey, God wanted us to be rich. What's wrong with that? And they, you know, prayed around. Let's get richer. And it's a goal, which is obviously antithetical to what, you know, according to even the Gospels in the Bible, to what Jesus said. Mm-hmm. It's always struck me as so odd that so many Christians don't really follow the tenets of, you know, mm-hmm. Christ. But that being said, it makes me think about just the... Talking about how religions, gods, and faiths reflect the cultures of the time, Christianity is a great example of this because it starts out as this radical pacifist organization. They get in trouble with the Romans because they won't fight and because they won't worship the emperor as a god. And it becomes, you know, a problem for them then in the way that they're too pacifistic. And then... You know, Romans make Christianity the state religion through Constantine. Well, now they got a problem on their hands because now they're the state religion and states got to fight. So they start to make allowances. And then Roman Empire falls in the West. Now they got to rely on some of the Frankish Germanic kings to help spread Christianity and protect them. All right, God's a little bit, you know, even more, you know, friendly with war. Because you're doing it for a good reason. That's why God's going to let you get off. And it changes, and it changes. And people... you know, change it to make it suit their needs. People have done this with religion all throughout history.
Yeah.
Dr. Ion talked about how it's used to control people, and that's true. And it's surprising how often people buy into their own lie because it soothes their conscience.
Yeah.
And so that's why when you look at these, look at the faith and look at what gains is it bringing the people? Well, why are they buying into it? You know? And also, this just with our group especially, at this point, it shouldn't even really need to be said that you don't need to look outside yourself to find greatness and to find that that strength. You have it within you to do anything that you can put your mind to in this world within the bounds of, you know, you made the point. If you're in a war-torn country, you don't have the same options as if you're living in a first-world Western nation. And it's not always universal, but... within each of these places, you have immense strength you can draw from.
Well, I think that there's individually, I think, well, let me say back up and say spiritually, each of us is in our own incarnation and our own experience. And I think we're failing at creating a better planet. I think that there's still lots of opportunity to continue to do that, provided we stop using excuses. and I think this is ultimately the problem I have with religion is it excuses so many things, and it you know, opens the doors for violence, or in the mm-hmm. name of my God, or, you know, in the name of no God, you know, in the name of whatever, I can do what I want. And so I think in that regard, there's so many, but that's been going on from the beginning of time as humanity. There's always, you know, a bad apple in the, you know, when you think about more than 7 billion people on the planet, it's a small percentage of people who are extremely violent.
This is true. You know, even fewer today.
Yeah. And, you know, so when you look at a ratio, it's just who does have power tends to like that power, and there tends to be more violence, or, you know, folks who short circuit, mm-hmm. you know, and want power or something. So, you know, I mean, there's lots of things in the news today we don't necessarily need to reference, but I think that there's a lot of short circuiting because we're not looking at ourselves. And the whole point of you know, it's within us. We have the capacity and the capabilities to look within for our own answers that, you know, serves one's own evolution as a spiritual being. You know, and at the end of life, do you say, what did I contribute? You know, that's a thing. I think that's the only question to ask. What did I contribute? Something, I hope.
You know? Well, we all contribute something. Was that something good?
Yeah, and you know, in that conscience. So it's, you know, to me, that's the guiding force of life, is being able to live with yourself and your own conscience in life, and, you know, being choked because God didn't give me everything I wanted in the moment is kind of defeating the whole purpose of evolution in my mind. So, but again, that's, you know, everybody on their own path. And again, that's not a slam at people who, look, I talk to spirits all the time. You know, other entities, I talk to them all the time. And I like to think we have kind of a relationship, and I like to believe they help me out now and again, but usually that's with ideas and, you know, supportive energy. I'm ultimately the one who has to do the work. Mm-hmm. So,
And, you know, it's religion and gods have been too often the justification. Just like you said, Dr. Ricky, it's people justifying evil actions, or people justifying them not having to put in the work on themselves. A lot of times justifying that they don't have to grow because, hey, we already got to figure it out. I don't need personal growth.
It's true.
And, you know, I think we were about to kind of wrap up the segment. It would be remiss if we didn't point out that there are many religions, ideas of spirituality that don't involve a god or deities per se. Even in Buddhist religion, they have, you know, they have gods, kind of, but they're not really gods as much as they're just super-powered beings that live for hundreds of thousands of years, but they all eventually die. They all move on. It's all part of the great cycle. And so there have been many faiths that we know of that do not involve a supernatural power of that kind. But it is fascinating. It is a limitless pool of discussion, and thank you for the back and forth. You know, we've had some comments. Otto was making some jokes, you know, my God is better than your God, and a few people have made that jokes and having a good back and forth in chat. Love seeing that. It is kind of funny because we literally had battles where that was even said, my God is better than your God, and then they went to battle and they would,
you know, my late teacher Frank back in the 70s said, if you don't like the God you have, fire him and hire a new one. You know, and really, I mean, I'm in my early 20s and I'm saying, what do you mean fire him and hire a new one? Oh, all right, no, I'm catching on, I get it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that ain't working for me, so I got to find something else to believe in. So, yeah.
That's a great way to say it.
And, it is so.
And realize, you know, sometimes that you don't have to have, you don't have to have this kind of, what's the word I want to think, stereotypically old-fashioned, dogmatic, fundamentalist spirituality. You can find your own individuality in your faith of different varieties of spirituality. It doesn't have to be tied to a deity. It can be belief in people. For a long time, I was terrified of the idea of belief. I came from religion. I was, you know, burned by this faith in God. You know what did it? I was playing Mario when I was 6. I prayed to God to get me through the level. Almost made it. Still died before the end. Had to reset the whole thing. That's when I knew God deserted me at 6 years old. So ever since then, I was jaded. No, I'm kidding. That did happen, but I am kidding about the other part. But nonetheless, I was afraid of it. But you can embrace belief in your fellow, you know, in the spirit of humanity, in your friends and your family and these things. So I have rambled on long enough, Dr. Vicky.
Okay, we have to get on with some cards.
It's that time.
Like, well, we have Ione up first, and then Anna, who's with her again, joining the program. Glad to have you again, Anna.
Pleasure to see you. And Dr. Allen, I have number 39, education. Always critical for a critical mind. Continual education is the key to individual and collective consciousness and personal success. Commit yourself to lifelong learning, educating yourself continually. If you don't know something, first look for the answers yourself, Then ask if necessary. Gain education and advice through various sources, including people, but always strive to find your own answers. Look for lessons in life experience, situations, and circumstances. Make it your adage to listen, think, learn, grow, and live.
And I got the Ten of Hearts in support of that, I own. And I think in education, and perhaps that's how I'm going to translate this, in what you've been learning, you're sharing it with others. Because the Ten of Hearts indicates to me more about family, finding that joy in family. But you also might be finding a new way to communicate. What you're learning, you're attempting to impart some of that. But again, it's, you know, it's like information is age appropriate. Information is also psyche appropriate, like when people are willing to hear, but they see more through example. So I think that there's a shift in your dynamic, and I think it's really positive. But you have to be patient. That's what I think.
Very nice.
Anna is next. Let's get one for Anna.
Anna, you get my favorite card. It's wild card number one, Paradox.
I love that card.
It's so great. A truth can be found in seemingly contradictory ideas. What may seem like a false proposition can be a set of new ideas and ways of thinking. Your solution may lay in the opposite direction than you think. Keep in mind that the cosmos works in equals and opposites. Not all truths lay in common opinions. This may be a time for contrarian thinking and opening your mind to what may not make sense at first, and thus new perspectives are discovered.
Well, when the moon is in support of paradox, Anna, it can be something as simple as there's a lot of mysteries going around. You might see a lot of synchronicities in your life, intersections of, hey, I just thought about that, this just happened. And I kind of see that as you can't intellectualize it, but it's still worth observing. So I'd say you're going through another shift. So that paradox is, it's true but not, and could be and might be, you know, that, oh, we've had some great discussions about paradox. But again, all things being hidden and beginning to be revealed. But the word synchronicity really comes to my mind for you. So it's watching for that and observing. And from that those observations, then you can start to develop new theories and new ways of thinking rather than the other way around. Sometimes we like to think about something, then we go look for it, Michael, as opposed to, you know, just kind of letting it happen and flow.
Trying to be some more of an active participant in your own life and development, you say?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Very
good. We have
good.
Jamil up next, I think.
Jamil, I have number 31 for you, Sacred Obligations. A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good for all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Seven of Hearts in support of that, Jamil. Seven of Cups in tarot language. The Seven of Hearts is trying to help us distinguish the difference between illusion and dreams, or fantasy and realism, that kind of thing. And when you have sacred obligations in this, what I think it's trying to say is your belief systems might be changing a little bit. Where you thought some things were not important, you're now seeing the importance or the relevance. And things you put a lot of importance on, it's passé. So it's just changing some of your philosophical viewpoints about life is how I see that. So that's really good. Kind of like, you know, when, and I'm not saying you do this, Jamil, but you know some people, Michael, when they're very critical of the homeless, until you get to know homeless and their stories. And then you have more compassion, you know, so that everyone's got a story. And we start to have a different view of what life is and who it can happen to, you know, those kinds of things.
It often surprises you.
True. So we have Dr. Mike up next, I think.
All right, Dr. Mike, I have number 11, awareness. Every human being has responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can according to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude.
Four of Clubs, so the Four of Wands in support of awareness, Mike. I see that as promises, obligations. It's what I call the only marriage card in the deck. And it doesn't have to be a marriage, like an intimate partner marriage. It can be a business marriage. It can be, you know, a friendship marriage. Anything that you feel connected and obligated to, or like you've made promises to. So I think what this is saying is you might be reviewing some of these obligations that you've had and maybe taking a different stance. So just kind of reviewing who you think you owe what to. And how that is going to manifest. So, and vice versa. You know, what others, where you're not getting enough in return, where you say, I'm not going to invest my time in that anymore. So, I hope that makes sense. Wendy is saying that Mike had this, had the awareness card on March 30th.
Yeah.
So that's a repeat for Mike.
Yeah, not terribly long ago. The odds were against it, and it came up twice, so very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now you think, how many cards in a deck, and it comes up with all these different people? See, synchronicity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Audra,
I have number 40, relationships. Healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They are not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are, not for what they believe. Don't be judgmental. End the relationship, regardless of who it is with. For healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card can refer to a healthy or toxic relationship, or to the relationship of one thing to another.
Jack of Hearts in support of that, Audra. And I think this is, I got two things collided in my brain. Just then, is as you're making decisions and moving forward, be sure that if you're including others, it's temporary kind of thing. So don't be making decisions for other people that you can't see beyond that very basic commitment. So, because you got a long-term plan coming into effect here that may have nothing to do with anybody but you. So that's kind of what I want to say here. But relationships, while, let's say, having responsibilities to a child or until that child is of age, that kind of thing, and where that is, but all those things do come to an end where you have to look beyond that. That was just a flash, Audra. So I hope that makes sense in some way.
All right. Oof.
I go out on a limb with these things, Michael, sometimes.
Hey, you go out on those limbs. I know for me, they connect. So, all right, we have our card keeper, Wendy, and just a thank you to Wendy for, you know, keeping track of these cards and helping point out some of these, you know, repeats, and that kind of just leads a whole different take on it. So thank you for that. Wendy, tonight I have number 19, Invoke the Counselor Within. There are times to seek advice from others as a means of summoning your own truth, but the answers you seek lie deep within. Look there. This may be a time to remind yourself not to codependently surrender your power to anyone or anything outside of yourself. Always determine your own truth and live according to the path that is right for you.
Wow, the King of Spades on that one, Wendy. The first thing I want to say is just because somebody might have an authority over you or above you in some way doesn't mean you have to agree with them or follow instructions if it's against your ethics. And whoa, that was just big. Sorry, again, Michael, I go out on a limb. But it might be that there's a bit of discord between you and someone in a position of power here, Wendy, or somebody who's trying to assert some power onto you. And you just can – I just get this feeling if you stay still and say, I think we need to talk about this, the whole energy will change. That I don't think it requires some big aggressive pushback. I think it just needs a, no, I think we need to talk about this. And everything deflates. That's what I get from that. So we have Dr. Edward next, Michael.
We do, and Dr. Edward, I have number 29, pay it forward. Living with gratitude and responsibility extends generosity to others, even with random acts of kindness that offer no self-benefit except the satisfaction of heartfelt kindness. This may be a time to calm the spirit and lift the heart by giving forward, without any particular reason, reminding yourself that love is the center of all life. Is there a way that you can pay it forward right now?
Edward, I get the Hierophant in support of that, and I think this is more about routines, home. See, Hierophant to me in a word is conformity. It's like, what is your rhythm and your routine and what kind of, we're talking tonight about religion and how that affects our culture and the way we live. It's kind of the things that we believe in, even philosophically, and how that demonstrates to daily life. So I guess what I'm in that pay it forward and the Hierophant together is there an equal value with those in your home that creates this good flow of energy? And is there something that you can do to make that flow a little easier? Sometimes it's about even moving furniture. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but just bring it right down to this place here has always been uncomfortable for you. So making those changes and having discussions with whomever you share your life with to say, this isn't working for me. And having, so that's that pay it forward, going back and forth. Sometimes we don't want to say anything because we don't want to cause trouble, because pay it forward comes to us as well as going out from us, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So it's like, I need something here, what I want to say.
Yeah. So I think.
Hope that makes sense.
All right. We have Darlene. Dr. Darlene next, and I have, let's see, number 20, deliberate intent. I was doing pretty good at having these ready, but I had to pacify the mighty beast dogs that I have with me. The simple act of intention registers your wants and desires with the universal consciousness, which then sets in motion energy for their attainment. Deliberate intent is focusing your intent like a laser, causing you to become entangled with whatever it is that you desire. It's not magic, and it requires effort. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Release with patience.
Ace of Diamonds in support of that. Darlene, if you're concerned about money and a little finances seem to be a little tight, it's what this is saying here is focus your attention like a laser. And it's not just about budgeting. It's about being creative to bring in more. And I feel like there's a good turn of events coming for you, provided you have that follow through. I'm lousy at follow through, I got to tell you. Sometimes I can be like a really good racehorse out of the gate, Michael. But man, I get slowed down around the track.
Hey, you're not alone. You have no idea the wonderful plans I have each and every night. I'm like, tomorrow I'm going to wake up. I'm going to do this. I'm going to have an early breakfast. I'm going to get started early. Come to me hitting the snooze button 15 times and getting up just enough time to get to work.
I know. So for Darlene, it's just that deliberate intent is keep that energy, find that energy output that you can sustain that all the way around the track there, Darlene, and good things are about to shift and come to you.
I love it.
By the way, I have to say thank you to folks in the chat for the feedback. Edward is saying he just offered to help the owner of the house to move the couch. He thought that was funny. And I was talking about even as it's about moving a couch. Oh, wow. These little things come out,
Very interesting.
Anyway.
All right.
Okay.
We have Ronaldo, and I have number 5, Law of Control. Differences are inevitable, and diversity is desirable. The law of control says that you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave.
Ace of Spades. Ooh. A lot of control in the Ace of Spades, Ronaldo. This is a tough one because I want to say it can go both ways. Somebody could be very frustrated with you, or you're very frustrated with someone else because of a disagreement or different ideas of how things should be done. The law of control, of course, is you can't change people. Michael just read that to you. So what I want to say to you is a situation here where slow and easy is better. And don't let things be imposed on you. Just be yourself. And again, with minimal defense. I really am a believer, Michael, that the less defense often is the greater offense, if that makes sense. Silence is really powerful. And it's really by having control over yourself, not others. So a situation here, the Ace of Spades is that is success, but through challenge. So I just want to say chill in someone or situation that you might be dealing with.
You know, I think chill is always good advice. And I think you're right. You know, sometimes there is... Well, I'm not going to say it any better than you. I was going to say
Oh, silence is powerful. Yeah,
silence is powerful. Absolutely. All right, Dr. Kevin is our last card of the evening. And Dr. Kevin, I have number one, perfection. Let's see. Always remember that you are perfect just as you are, a perfect work in progress, always changing and growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by the choices made today. This card may indicate that a situation is either perfect or not perfect for you. Embrace all mistakes as they are vital to your growth while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
Well, two came out together, honestly, Kevin. Page of Hearts and the Five of Clubs. Now, that's the Page of Cups and the Five of Clubs. And when I see this together, I am seeing a better turn of events for you, better communication, and I feel like maybe you've just come off of could be a bad week or a bad month, or, you know, I don't mean bad, I mean challenging and a little bit stressful, and I see that this is really improving, especially by the end of the month. So at the end of the month is like a week away, not even. So I think that you'll be looking back at May saying, phew, you know, I don't know where that time went, but it's improving. And there's a little victory here. So if you've been, I don't know, I'm seeing looking at paperwork and kind of sweating it, but it gets sorted out really quickly. So it's all right. It's good.
Paperwork getting sorted out quickly sounds great to me.
There we go. I hope that makes sense. Anyway, to some degree. Well, mm-hmm. Michael, you know, an hour goes by so fast when we're together. It's crazy.
It does. Time flies when you're having fun, as they say. And I am having fun for what it's worth.
I am too. But on another note, if I can just put this out there, my heart breaks for the folks of Texas right now.
You read my mind.
I know that all of us join in like a moment of sending as much love and support to the friends and family of all those lost, and it's just horrific. And I mean, without going into all the politics of it, all that we have to do, all we have to give, is our support and energetically and sending love. And you know, it's again, I'm so on the cusp here of talking politics, Michael.
I know. It's
control.
It's,
you know, gun control. But I think this is a perfect example of somebody short-circuiting, and it's having access to too much power to harm so many. And I think it's bad enough. And people in our everyday lives, you know, there's always somebody who wants to flex their muscles or tell somebody off. You see it in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You see it wherever you go, you know, but they also don't carry a weapon. And thankfully, and this is what I'm so grateful of, living in a country, and I'm going to boast a little bit, Michael, that we don't see people packing guns anywhere in Canada. Nowhere does somebody pack a sidearm. And I've been to the U.S. enough times, and it's so alarming to me when I see people like with their holster and their guns, and it creeps me out, and it makes me very unnerved to think that somebody in the snap of a finger can cause tremendous damage. But meanwhile, I had to say my piece.
Well, I was going to start by saying that you read my mind and you beat me to the punch, because I did want to bring up the tragedy in Texas as well. I might not go to the same extent, but I agree with you. You know me, and you know how I think. And I wasn't going to just stop on that one. What was it? I don't even recall if it was this past week or the weekend before, because it's become a blur. The shootings in Buffalo, it was a week ago from this past weekend, and that heinous act, and the family is suffering from that. And it is a multi-level breakdown, but it is also, obviously access to guns is an issue. I mean, how are we going to solve it? It's going to take time, and we're going to have to figure it out. And that's the extent of it that we'll get into, because there are people that, may not agree, and that is absolutely everyone's right, and don't want to disparage anyone for it. But that being said, it is heartbreaking. It is undeniably heartbreaking.
And it's all children in one classroom. I did start to tear up when I read that. One classroom, he locks himself in, and oh my God, what that must do to all these people and the trauma for the rest of their lives. And so I just send little prayers to these folks, and try to rise above even my own pain for them and my own fears for people. But we ought not to have to live in a fearful world, but we do.
Well, and I would also encourage you not to let fear restrict you in life also. Mm-hmm. Because, first off, you can't let the darker side of life win. You can't let the evil win and restrict you from living your life. And you can't live in fear. But there are things that can be done, and we'll try to pursue that. Mm-hmm. That being said, just to kind of, because obviously I think we know, Dr. Vicky, where you are, a little bit on me too, but just to clarify, I don't want to, we're not against anything on the other side. There are intellectual thoughts that can be discussed, but I think we all agree something needs to be done, regardless of, which side you're on. But that being said,
I'm just going to throw this out there. Canada does have guns.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, the second largest.
Do we have crime? Yes, we have crime.
But it's an entirely different culture, I think, around it.
We have a very different culture, and I know that when my daughter and her husband come home, just crossing the border, she doesn't mind getting out of the gas station, of her vehicle. Well, traveling through the U.S. is intimidating, and there's, again, different states are states. But
take it from somebody who's lived in the U.S. his entire life. I don't think about it on a day-to-day basis, and statistically, it's extremely unlikely on an individual basis, but it is too frequent. It is more frequent than it should be. It is a problem that needs to be addressed, and I have hope that in succeeding generations we will. But that being said, I think that's probably the extent that we can kind of get into on that. And it's a
prayers to everyone.
But that's not enough.
I know. But that's all I got today.
Yes, but what I can offer is just my heartfelt sympathy to anybody that's gone through this. And let's not just discount the fact that, and again, I don't want to just deflect from the current issue, but let's not forget the fact that people are in pain all over in many, many parts. There are recent stories coming out of Ukraine of, some of the horrors that are going on, and your hearts go out to it. And it's just hoping to build a better world through increased awareness, through evolved humanity. So that's something I want to go out with. And that's my last thoughts. Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts before we kind of begin to wrap it up for the evening?
Yeah, it's all going in my report when I go home to the home planet.
So after the home planet gets this report, are they going to come then destroy the planet just to take care of it once and for all? Or are they going to say, let's give them all the best technology?
I don't know. A little magic dust wouldn't hurt.
Well, off of that wonderfully uplifting last part of our broadcast, we do look forward to next week. We're going to get into part two of our discussion of UFOs, alien life, potential visitations by alien life, and I think a couple of updates from, the recent Pentagon reports. So, something to look forward to in that conversation, and I hope that you'll join us. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.